boys. We're ready to record another episode of the Chasing Tone Podcast.
The things I have done today for you gentlemen will never, ever see the light of day. I'm just going to let you know.
Is this on your other site?
No.
On your other fan site?
We don't talk about that
in public,
right?
The one with the only, only some people that are fans?
Quote unquote, styleupyourpet.com.
Right.
Except what is the pet?
I mean, I've been listening to the latest series from last podcast on the left there, Blake, and suddenly in my head, their humor and your humor melded and it was not good.
maybe it's one and the same. I also have been listening to that series. So
yeah, it's really interesting. And it has led me to conclude that I must now watch the film Boogie Nights, which I have never seen.
You've never seen that?
I've never seen it. Yeah. So I've got that saved for a weekend.
Richard, you are in for, well, I'd say a treat, but it's a wild ride. It's insane.
Like a wild ride, and I think that's part of what the film's about.
Philip Seymour Hoffman in that is just out of control.
You know, fun fact, I'm actually in that movie, but, you know.
What, just were you, part of like, a fluffer?
No. You're close.
His elbow's in it.
I'm too close, and I want to change subjects to something altogether more important.
Yeah, this is dangerous territory. We're
very
right now.
Legally dangerous territory. We've just released a couple of new pedals, Bri. Or are they new pedals? I don't know. Perhaps you can tell everyone.
Sort of. So years ago, we had the Tweed 57 and the Black 65. And they did
Black
all right.
65, first Wampler I ever plugged into.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That is?
Yep. It was at Pro Guitar Shop, just happened to be there, and I was like, what's that? And I tried it.
Really?
I ended up with a Velvet Fuzz, but of course I did.
Yeah, I was going to say, Black 65 does not seem like your thing.
I just didn't know. I was like, that seems interesting, so I tried it. But yeah, I got fuzzy.
So we released those. They, over time, just the way some things work, they got discontinued, and then I noticed people started buying them on the used market, which is fine. But then I noticed they stopped appearing on the used market as much and prices started going higher, which is kind of silly.
It was. And I was looking at those prices. There was some seller on eBay called Wake Blyland. He had them up for 400. Mad Ollie, he's got them up for $500. I don't know what's going
Ryan
on.
Ryan Bumpler has them up for $1,000 a piece. It's so interesting.
And that's why he was so upset, because no one bought his because we undercut him. No, sorry, I interrupted you.
It wasn't me.
No, but I mean, so one of the things I think let me back up. I did a piss poor job of like the product videos for those. And so when I was going back through the old videos that I did for him, it was one of those moments where like you just kind of stick your hands over your eyes like, oh my God, this is terrible. How did I think this was good enough to release to the public as a video, as a product video? So like I'm watching these videos going, oh God, that's just horrible.
For what it's worth, Brian, that was like almost maybe over 10 years ago.
It was like a decade ago.
You
right?
shot it on an iPhone 3G. So I'm just going to tell you now,
Brian.
Before 4K was a thing.
Yes.
Before a K was a thing. No, I mean.
Yeah, we were still in the P.
Right.
Just to let you know.
Phone video.
Right. That video is now going to get probably more hits than the new videos because you said how terrible it is.
That would be impossible because it's been privatized.
Ah, excellent work.
Now that is no fun at all.
It has been marked as private, so
eradicated from the internet.
Oh, now you're getting hacked. Oh, that's great.
wait, what is this? Why is it live all of a sudden? So I'm watching that and I'm like, oh, keep in mind, like that was before I had done thousands and thousands of videos. So I was still kind of a novice at making videos and it shows, you know, like I'm just like, I feel like there's no energy there. I feel like, you know, it looks as awkward as it felt. You know,
I mean, I have.
And it is awkward talking to a camera. That is an awkward thing.
as part of the kind of critical appreciation of our brand, which comes hand in hand with my job, I have clearly had to watch the videos you're talking about. And I do remember when we talked about doing videos for this, you were like, well, what about the videos I recorded before? Because you hadn't remembered them at that point.
I hadn't watched them yet.
Well, Bri, I've just watched them and they're okay, but you're a bit better these days. And I think I was putting it very mildly to protect your feelings.
there was parts in there. I don't even remember who was editing at the time, but there was parts in there and I'm like, why? Like, I think I just farted and you kept it on camera. Why didn't you cut that out?
Brian, I thought that was the best part of the video.
That would be most interesting. On TikTok most often.
Mm-hmm. So what are these things? Talk about them a little bit more in depth.
So, I mean, people are going to think of them, because it's just a pedal, but people are going to think of them like a traditional overdrive. But the truth is, and the thing that I didn't explain well at all, is that... Sorry, got distracted. The thing that I didn't explain well at all is that when I created them, it was for more of a little bit more of a different use than like, hey, look, this is my Marshall-y sounding overdrive. It was, there was several things I was going for. Like if I'm in a situation where, you know, I'm like doing some sort of gig and there's just backline amps, like sometimes at a lower level like me, you end up with turds for amps, right? I'm like, so I want something that I can actually just plug it into like the effects return and get like a good Fender-y type of sound, whether that's more of a dirty tweed or more of like a clean, you know, blackface style amp.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that's what I was going for, but I also wanted to be able to use it as a regular pedal. But what I didn't explain is, in order to do that, the settings on the EQ completely change in such a way that it doesn't seem logical at all. Like, you would look at it and you'd be like, why did you do that? That is, why would you turn the mids all the way up and the treble way down? That's just crazy.
And this was something that you actually explained to me when I got the pedals. Because when I got the pedals first, I was like, so everyone loves these pedals. I must love them immediately. And I admit, at first, I was like, I'm not getting anything special here. And it was largely because of my complete misunderstanding of two things. One, what Brian means when he says, plug it into a clean amp. And two, again, as Brian says, the gain structure and the EQ structure on these is pretty unique. I mean, it's almost, I guess, Bri, kind of as if the EQ affects the gain stage more than the output stage, or the...
It does, because that's the way those Fender amps were.
Right.
The EQ is way before all the gain stages. So, like, if it's clean, you get more bass. But if it's breaking up, you just turn it from flubby to tight. Mm-hmm. You know? So, like for example...
My wife wishes she could do that with my body. I'm just going to let you know. She'd be looking for that for years.
Exercise regimen. For example, let's say you have like a tweed sort of like a basement or something. As you turn it up and it starts distorting, you're going to like start cranking up the mids, turning the bass down, that sort of thing. So it gets to be more of a tighter distortion and not more fuzzy. Those type of amps can be pretty fuzzy when you have all that bass up front. So saying that, the pedals are kind of the same way. If you're using it in a clean way, well, that's one thing. It'll look a little more like a traditional EQ setting. But if you're using the pedals like you would a typical overdrive, then you're going to like turn the bass damn near all the way down. You're going to turn the mids up. You're going to turn the treble down a bit to compensate for the mids going up, because the tone stack is really similar to like what the actual amp tone stack is. And so... that basically means like you have to negate things. So this gets into a little bit of electronics theory, where like an amp tone stack, when the knobs are at noon, are not neutral or transparent or whatever. That is not a thing. It doesn't work that way. In fact, it's actually got a bit of a mid scoop with it when you just look at the tone stack. So when you run a mid scoop into a mid scoop, you get ultra mid scoop turd. So
can I just issue an apology to our listeners, because that's the fourth potty mouth incursion by Brian in this episode.
Turd is a potty mouth?
Five. I mean mildly.
I think it's actually the literal definition of it. Yeah, that I think about it.
I use the phrase hot turd all the time. I didn't know that was derogatory.
What you do in your own household is up to you.
Biofuel is a thing, Bri. Don't knock it until you've tried it.
So basically what you're doing is you're basically compensating on the pedal because of the amps EQ, so it's not too scoop.
Compensating for turd.
Compensating, you just put it in the non-turd setting.
Yes, non-turd, my favorite setting on all pedals.
Yes, it's usually a switch. I like to put them on knobs. More turd, less turd.
I can't even respond to that statement without saying the thing that will get me cancelled forever. So I'm just going to swiftly move on. There are switches on both of these pedals.
Turd and no turd, yes.
We've talked about turd, it.
Well,
no turd.
The Tweed 57 is like a link emulation switch. So do you want to explain a little bit how that works? So,
yeah, because if you look at a Bassman, which if you're not familiar with that, think of a Plexi, similar sort of preamp section. Often people will kind of jumper those two inputs together. That way you take what they call the normal channel, and what's the other one called?
It's like the high gain or whatever.
Right,
it is.
I think. But basically you now are running both those channels in parallel, which gives it's like you're blending in more bass or more treble almost. By linking those together, that allows you to do that rather than just going into a brighter channel or more of a darker channel. And the switch basically links those for you. So you have the normal channel, you have the bright channel, and then you have them both linked together to give more of a higher gain. Not marshalling, not Sedano, totally a Fender Tweedy type of thing. And if you're not familiar with what I mean, the video will shows you what I mean. I'm running through clips of a Bassman and a Tweed Deluxe, so you can see here's what they sound like crank.
And yeah,
which is not anything like a Marshall. Nothing.
Those videos are on our YouTube channel. They're also on WamplerPedals.com. And if you want those special videos that Brian talked about, the ones he's deleted, hit me up. I'll do them for money.
At your own risk. I mean, you'll probably fall asleep within the first minute and a half.
Well, there's a use for that too. And on the Black 65, it's more of a traditional boost switch we've got going on there. So that
was something completely different. And I really just did that kind of for fun. So,
well, and because you had to, because that is a beautiful little switch. I'm just going to let you know, playing with that boost.
It kind of makes it fuzzy a bit. But the whole idea was the old Mesa Boogies, the older ones, were basically from a Fender topology. And an added gain stage in front of that. So I'm like, okay, well, let's do that on a pedal and just make that boost be able to be toggled on and off. So therefore, that's basically what you got. So you got a bunch more gain that then goes into that circuit, which gives it more of a boost flavor. Now, keep in mind, this is where the EQ comes in again, because if you want it fuzzy, well, then keep that bass control way up. But if you want it more crunchy and more authentic to what would be going on in that style of Mesa Boogie, you got to turn the bass down quite a bit, turn the mids up quite a bit, and turn the treble down to compensate a bit.
I do like a boost. Slightly rippled with a flat underside. No one will get that from your country.
Underside? Is that like part of a car?
So, are these pedals, because I've never tried the original pedals, circuit-wise, are these the same as the original Tweed 57 Black 65? I don't want to say circuit-wise. I mean mathematically. I don't mean have you used exactly the same brand of resistors or capacitors.
We improved it from that standpoint. So it's exactly the same circuit. We did improve something. So since we've made pedals for 20 years, obviously you're going to be able to improve what you do. So changing the layout a bit, cleaned up some noise, a few different part choices in a few places, that sort of thing. So basically, same sort of sound, just giving it, making it be the best product it can be.
Yeah, yeah.
And the switches nowadays available are way better than they used to be back 10, 12 years ago. So,
Yeah. And as you say, we've learned a lot, or you've learned a lot. I'm learning a lot, but you've learned a lot about how to make things quieter, especially those darn switches when they're activated. That's always a thing. But essentially, the sound's the same, but the quality overall is improved.
Well, the quality of the stuff that you're not like, it's not going to feel different. It's not going to play different. But when you have the gain all the way up, the newer version is going to have less background hiss, for example.
Very cool. I really dig the pedals.
Like I've said before, if anytime you have gain, you're going to have background hiss. Anytime. Unless you have a gate.
And that's fantastic.
90% of our support emails dealt with there in that statement. But
I mean, it's true because, so many times you're like, how come when I turn the gain all the way up on this high gain pedal, why is there background hiss? I'm like, because math.
Yeah. So I kind of alluded to, my testing process with pedals is always exactly the same. First, don't talk to anybody. Just plug it in as if I have bought the pedal from a shop and know nothing about it. And then ring Brian up and go, what's this pedal all about then? That's my testing. It's a scientific, well-proven testing process. And
then is this the turd setting you were referring to?
Why does it smell brown, Bri? I mean, I made light of it. I did really actually quite dig these out of the box. It took me a little bit of tuning, but I am an inveterate fiddler, as everyone who knows me will tell you.
And that's a perfect situation where what you think you would set it at is not going to be really where you're going to end up setting it at to get the best thing.
100%. And I had, I'd done exactly what you don't want me to do, which is pretty much started everything out at 12 o'clock.
Everyone does. Everyone's always
and work my way backwards and forwards.
Transparent setting.
Well, I look at it this way. Noon is the, I've just taken a photo of this pedal setting. So if every pedal comes to my board is set at noon by default. But I'm an inveterate fiddler, so I'm quickly on the rotate. But one of the things you got me to do pretty quickly, I mean, it sounded great through the Soldano, but I was using it more as a kind of light, it was like a light overdrive, but it was very overdriven on all settings. When I moved it to the Rivera, which has a Fender clean channel, it completely changed the character of the pedals. They really took control of that amp, and I had very little coloring from my amp, and all of it was controlled from these boxes. And I mean, for dialing in sort of Hendrix tones was absolutely brilliant. Sort of even Clapton-y tones, absolutely perfect. I know, that may not be what everyone's listening to these days. The kids are all listening to whatever, but I dug it through the clean amp a lot.
I would suggest doing a couple of different things just to try different uses. So one is bypass the preamp of your amp completely, run it direct into the effects return.
Voodoo. What are you talking about, man?
You're now using it literally as a preamp. Real preamp and not a marketed preamp, right? It's literally being your preamp. The other thing is, and UA did something like this recently, but digitally, you know, if you're running just a pedal board and like, let's say you're at church or something, you don't have an amp, use that as a preamp into your IR loader and it will interact more like the amp, like the actual amp. So for example, the thing, and I always kind of piss on digital pedals sometimes in this area.
Another swear, listeners. I apologize. Spray yourself, Bri.
I haven't
heard.
So whenever you drive a digital pedal, like let's say you're like, I got this Klon and it's got gigantic sums of output volume, and you run that into your digital pedal, you get really ugly artifacts.
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, I just like an analog, gain stages, for example. And I'm not using gain necessarily like high gain, but gain stages as far as like what you would find in a tube amp. So when you run that Klon type pedal or a Tube Screamer into like the Black 65, it's as you turn it up, it's going to start getting more gainy, like it would be if you turned up a deluxe reverb or a twin and drove that really hard with the, a mid bass pedal.
It's very cool. I hope everyone has already purchased and they're only available direct from our website, wamplerpedals.com. We have changed the aesthetic design a little bit. I've done something I've never done before here, Bri, and I was secretly incredibly proud of it when it turned up. And
black
I
on black.
People dig it. It is entirely black on black. No, I mean, I've tweaked. I've been respectful to the original design, so I've tweaked the logos. There were some kerning problems, some typography problems. Let's say before I've fixed those, Bri. You're welcome.
You didn't like my Microsoft Paint work.
Well, I didn't like the fact that the apostrophe on the black 65 sat 1 inch between the word black and the number six. So that upset me, Bri. And I've used kind of period-friendly Fender typefaces, so they've got different control typefaces to kind of hint at what Fender was doing. And the background graphic on the black 65 is my interpretation of the airwaves from a good speaker cone. Perhaps on fungibles, I don't know. But on the Tweed 57...
In a quantum field, though, right?
In a quantum field, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. But on the Tweed 57, I tried to create a printable Tweed texture, and I think I kind of got there. So if you feel the face of the Tweed 57, it feels like it's made of Tweed because of how we've printed the texture on there. And when that arrived, that was one of the most exciting things ever to happen to me via post. I'm just going to let you know.
Interesting. I haven't touched it to feel it yet.
What? Isn't the first thing you do to touch, smell, and then lick your pedals?
No, I just usually look at them and I'm like, huh. All right.
Tastes like tone.
For some reason, this tastes like lead. Weird.
That's your soldering iron, Brian.
No, I'm pleased with them. Again, because I knew they were coming out as a series, I designed them to be very consistent with each other so they look good next to each other or on their own. They're not leaving my pedal board. I'm going to let you know that right now, Mr. Wampler. You're going to have to fight me for them.
Well, what would you do with them if you did take them off your pedal board?
Lick
it's not
them,
very nice.
Sell them on eBay for $500.
I wonder if the originals will now be worth more. Let me tell you, if you're going to pay more than these, you're being disingenuous to yourself.
This is just a limited run, so these are going to run out pretty quick. You know,
they may have even run out by the time this goes live. Yeah, we don't know.
They're not going to last long. This is a very limited run, so just kind of a fun little thing we did.
Yeah, because this publishes on Wednesday, and they'll already have been out.
They'll have been out by half a week by then.
So. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So hopefully they're still around. They may not be, but check it
otherwise,
out.
This is the most useless 20 minutes of your life.
We just wasted your time. No, I mean, it was a lot of fun making it. A lot of fun also kind of understanding about how that tone stack works. Because I think that's a pretty, I'm sure you can tell me other pedals have done it the same way, but that's a pretty unique pedal for me. I've never had a pedal that didn't work exactly as I thought it would. And I know a little bit about pedals.
Yeah, it's because I needed it to do two different things. I needed it to be able to be used as a preamp or to come out of your pedal board into an IR loader. And I also wanted to use it as a pedal. And without basically having like, here's one section of EQ for one purpose, but flip the switch and that EQ doesn't work and it's a whole different EQ section.
Right. Yeah, no, I get you.
Which, you know, no real good reason to have, five knobs on it now? Eight knobs on it?
I don't need to boast, but I know a little bit about preamps, Bri. You know, a little bit about op-amp preamp circuits.
I was going to say, you've been working on TLO-72s.
Well, I know it was my 71-based op-amp booster, which I'm going to tell you, chaps, has like been used fully on my board now ever since I made it. That's a very satisfying feeling. Mm-hmm. Creating a pedal from scratch that you then use to get the sounds you want is a very satisfying feeling.
You should tell Brian all about it.
Well, I intend to, in great detail and boring, monotonous tone. No, no, I really dug that. But this weekend, I finished off the pedal kit from Jed's Peds. And I just want to give it a little shout out. Hey, Brian, they wanted you to send them a Christmas card. I think they're big fans of yours. I said,
like a paper Christmas card?
Yeah, I said, you got no chance. I said, he doesn't even remember when it's like my birthday. It's only because it shares it with somebody else that he remembers it's mine too. So
I usually get my wife saying, by the way, tomorrow's Christmas. I'm like, oh yeah. Forgot about that.
But and also I understand that the guys who run Jed's Peds, who I've spoken to at length actually over the last week, have had a some sort of tragedy in their family. I don't know any details, but yeah, I just want to say that all of us are sending you our best wishes. Not a lot else I can say on that. But I really enjoyed making their kit. I mean, so I've made two kits now from two different manufacturers, and they're both different, and both have really good points about them. This was the tone bender style, so it was three transistors, four pots, so it was, you know, reasonably complex circuit. This time, I tried to go all out on the enclosure, and tried is the operative word because I failed. So, look, I primed it well. I soaped it. I primed it. I sprayed it. I sprayed maybe a bit too much lacquer on it. Here's something I never realized. Lacquer takes about a year to dry. Like, I bought it in after it was completely touch dry after 2 days being in my garage at hot temperature.
Did you bake it?
Well, I left it in my garage for 2 days.
You gotta bake it.
And I put it on my my music keyboard, like just rested it on the keys. And when I took it off, it had like indents in the bottom of the lacquer. Yeah. I picked it up the other day, Bri, and just like prodded the lacquer with my nail, and it's still soft.
You gotta bake that stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't recommend using the oven that you cook in to do that either.
No, and I would also recommend probably not baking it with all the components inside, right?
No, just
the mistake I made.
The enclosure, not the components.
You recall, smoking that Behringer fuzz is what killed it. So yes, don't do that.
I didn't do that. No, I kind of messed up. So I thought I would try water slide transfers because you'd both mentioned them. So I bought the highest rated water slide transfer sheet on Amazon. Printed it out, came out okay. Cut it out, yeah, fine. Did the spray of the lacquer on it or the clear varnish. And as soon as I took it off...
You used lacquer or varnish?
No, I used acrylic varnish, to be clear. So it says use an acrylic clear coat, which that is. Did all that, put it in the water, transfer starts to come off, put it on the pedal, whole thing wrinkles up so bad that I can't even move it. Do that twice, decide that I hate this, I'm never doing it again, and just put some Dymo label stuff on it. Maybe next time I should try vinyl stickers, Blake. I think that's the answer.
I mean, they're readily available. They're available everywhere and not too expensive.
Is that what, Poison Noises used for the Not For Josh pedal?
The what now?
The Not For Josh pedal.
I've never heard of this pedal.
The Not For Josh pedal?
It apparently is also Not For Richard because they didn't send me one. Yeah, Jordan from Poison Noises. I'm talking to you. You know, oh, Richard, do you mind cross-posting this? Cross-posting what? Oh, this promotion that we've all been secretly working on behind your back. Oh, yeah, sure, I'll do the hard work. No pedal for Uncle Richard.
Oh, yes, the hard work. Approve.
No. It's a two-step process. I had to wait for it to be released first. How is that pedal, guys?
It's cool. Actually pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a great fuzz.
What's the topology there, Bri?
It's a op amp Big Muff on one side of the blend. The other side is an OCD.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's a pretty interesting... I like the two pedals I like, so...
Well, and instead,
about making an OCD
instead of the, you know, your blend knob, you see that and you're going to assume clean blend, right? That's what most people would think. Right. It's not. It does one of my favorite tricks that, you basically blend between the two circuits, which the first pedal, I'm sure it's not the first one to ever do it, but the first one that I was aware of that did it in this was the Pelotar. Yeah.
So how does it do that? Does it go into like a summing amp at the end and do the blend at that stage or
there's,
what?
There's different ways to do it. I don't know how Jordan did it.
But how would you do it? Telling your friend Richard how to make his own pedals and he went, this is a neat idea.
There's not like a one way is the best. It's like, all right, well, what's coming before it and what's the impedance?
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. that's that sort of thing. What's the gains? What's the impedance?
Hold on, I need to just lick the pedal first to tell you what the impedance is.
You can.
That's a 16 ohm pedal, right there.
You can do it actively. though. There's not just one way to skin that cat. I wouldn't advise skinning cats either. Not advised. But.
Yeah, they don't hold still. I mean, wait, never mind. I didn't say that.
Are we back to talking about water slide deckles? Because they don't hold still. And I'm never doing that again.
To the American audience, when he says deckle, he really means
that's not
decal.
A dirty word. Yeah.
He means a decal.
A but decal.
Richard.
Decal.
Is not, isn't Richard that, doesn't speak American.
Isn't that an album by Iron Man or Raekwon or someone? Oh, no, that's decal. Oh, it's Method Man. No, sorry. It's a completely different. What's decal all about? There's some funny noises in the song. They make these kind of like smoking noises, Bri.
Do we want to say, we kind of just glossed over what happened for anybody that missed it, but Poison Noises made a pedal that is specifically not for Josh Scott. It says, warning, this pedal and box may never be owned, borrowed, or purchased by Josh Scott. He will not have this pedal, and he's not going to survive. So did Jordan effectively just like kill Josh Scott by releasing this?
I haven't seen him.
It says he's not going to survive on the pedal.
The question is, which person that has bought this pedal is going to be like, all right, I am listing this on eBay or Reverb or something?
Somebody
because
probably.
Because it is fair game, right? Because you can't, I mean, Josh, he probably has like anonymous accounts, like Pedal Hoarder 101 or whatever.
Well, the question is, if Josh Scott does end up with one of these, right? If he gets one in his hands, is that like dividing by zero? Like, will things just kind of implode upon themselves and just will vanish into a black hole? Like, what's the cost
now
of
that
Josh
was a
actually getting
film,
this pedal?
But it had great robots in it. I'm just going to let you know that right now. What, the black hole? Disney's 1982 sci-fi epic?
Nope, never saw it.
What? What?
Mm-mm. Hey, there's a trim pod on this on the back. I never noticed that.
That's for the LED brightness.
You should immediately turn it till it breaks. Because I haven't got one and I don't want anyone else to have one.
Josh's not going to have one.
Well, me and Josh are in a club then. The club of not owning that pedal. It's probably the only club that me and Josh are in. Maybe the Bicycle Appreciation Society. Yes, oh, it clicks. Oh, yes, it's got knobs. Yes, very amusing, Jordan from Poison Noises. But you're not making me money, so let's go back to talking about my effects company, Bri. I'm going to...
Dickless effects.
That was very funny, and I enjoyed the videos. But I was going to ask you, Bri, I've got some like holes in my understanding, and part of this is because I haven't finished reading
Sasha's underpants.
Yeah. Me too. I've got some holes in my underpants.
That's what you're supposed to put your legs through, Bri. Talk to me about pots. Sorry.
Well, there's indica, there's sativa.
I know you don't have any holes in your understanding of that.
Of those
oh,
two
I've
together.
Got a story to tell you on the Patreon, but anyhow. That reminds me, I did. I don't know whether I told you guys this story, but I was having a chat to Jamie the other day. I was like, remind me to tell
Jamie
you the story
Humphreys.
Of Jamie Humphreys, yeah. How I avoided being kidnapped in India by pretending to be Captain Oliver of the SAS. I think I've told you guys that story. Have I not? That's going on Patreon too.
Okay. All right. Maybe you have, but I don't remember.
So I've been trying. So I've kind of figured out in the last week, I figured out how a circuit block be. Like, here's my little op amp. Here's my tone control. And so what I've done is I've got a little distortion pedal that I've now built on a smaller breadboard, and I'm adding blocks to it to see what happens. This week, I was adding a tone block at the output stage, so trying to control the tone. And I used something that simultaneously rolled off highs and basses, and you said that wasn't a very good tone control, and I concur. But I then realized I just don't understand how potentiometers work. Now, I know that sounds really stupid. I understand it's a variable resistor. I understand that at one point of the wiper, the resistance is X, and at another point of the wiper, the resistance is Y. That much I do understand. But I've noticed that they're not always connected in the same way. So I always assumed, much like a plug, that the three pins had to always have like a consistent one's ground, one's output, one's input type thing. But I've seen some schematics and some diagrams where that isn't the case. So what am I missing, Bri? Talk to me about this new science.
I think you're confusing
potentiometers.
what a potentiometer is with what we use it commonly for in certain situations. So it's kind of like, well, you can use a knife to, you know, butter your bread, but you could also use it to flay a fish.
I am not sure that is it.
Or open a box.
Or
cut someone.
Okay.
Who deserves it.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm making notes here, Bri. Filet fish decal. Yep, I'm with you.
So a potentiometer is two different resistors. You have three lugs. So imagine it's just two resistors between.
Three lugs, like this show.
Yeah, exactly. Imagine you have a resistor between, you know, the outer lug to the center and the other outer lug to the center. So as you turn the dial, the shaft, you're turning down the resistance on one of those resistors and you're turning up the resistance on the other one. And then vice versa whenever you turn it the other way. So that's all it is. But you can do a lot of different things. You can control gains depending how you wire it. You can use it to blend effects. We talked about that. You could use it as a volume control. You could use it as a tone control, a bass control, a mix control. You could use it as a sensitivity control for an envelope filter. Like, there's a million different things you can use it for
because you're
using
it
what doing what resistors do.
But in my mind, all of those controls are none of that effect, 100% of that effect, and the potentiometer takes you in between. Mm-mm. But I've got a weird brain. I think we've already established this, and I just can't understand things by reading books. I got to plug them in. So I spent my weekend plugging in potentiometers to different parts of, well, I was actually plugging it in around the clipping diodes. So I thought, let me try plugging a potentiometer in like a volume control, because that's how I thought all potentiometers had to be plugged in between the clipping diodes and the output. And yes, that did do something. It went from no clipping to full clipping, but it was also kind of acting like a volume control. But there were some bits in between where I was like, oh, you could do something here. But it was pure experimentation. I was playing the guitar and then just jumpering wires elsewhere going, what happens if I do this? Luckily, as we've established, I'm not working on surgery or planes, so really matter.
I started out doing that a long time ago too. Whenever I was messing with circuits, I'm like, well, what happens if I turn this transistor around?
I'm not that stupid, Bri.
No, I mean, there's some value to be gained in that. And that's,
no, absolutely.
You know, a lot of times I'm like, what happens if I make this capacitor bigger? Oh, wow, cool, more bass. Why does it do that?
So, I mean, the first thing I started to think of, well, like, what could I swap out to change things? Now, I knew that capacitors and resistors could be swapped out, but I didn't want to do that because we'd set up this circuit. This is the J201 circuit that you and I were playing around with. We'd set it up, and I didn't want to ruin what I already had. So I did some reading. So I started reading about different, you know, tolerances and voltage gains on transistors and different diode specifications. I was like, I ain't got anything that's going to change this radically. Like, I thought maybe if I changed the diodes to a different type of diode, maybe if I'd change from silicon to germanium, I might see a difference. But I don't think changing from one diode with a tolerance of X to the same diode series with a better tolerance is necessarily going to make any difference to
the sound. No, I mean, like a good example of that is if you're changing diodes from a 1N4148 to a 1N914.
Yes.
You're not going to get a lot of difference.
That's exactly the diodes I was looking at, to be honest.
Yeah, basically, that's the same diode.
Yeah, now, it's different tolerances, right? Different.
If you've swapped like an LED in place of one of those, completely different. It's not a tolerance thing. It's a clipping threshold thing. What's the point that it's going to start? How much voltage, I think I had to put this. How much voltage is it going to take before it starts clipping? How much signal? Right. How loud of a signal before it starts
clipping? But at the voltages or at the signal levels we're dealing with, like minor changes in diode don't really make a difference. But you're saying if I'd have stuck a couple of LEDs in there, not only would it look pretty, but that would have had a difference.
It'd have been quite a bit different. It may have just been a heck of a lot louder and probably not clipped as much. It all depends on voltages and signals and impedances.
Well, LEDs are diodes, Richard.
Yeah.
I am aware of what LED stands for. Thanks, Dr. Blake.
Well, you said take diodes out and put it in. Well, you're still putting diodes in, so just...
Yes, but, you know, diodes that are sort of set for a particular voltage gating principle or whatever, but...
I'll get your voltage principle.
So, really, where I am then, Bri, is I was trying to add a tone control to this, and the one that we started work on, it did exactly what you said. It killed the volume because it was, I mean, essentially, we just added, I think, a capacitor. I had to put them in parallel.
So the reason I did that is because you had a volume control and you had a tone control before it. And the way that it was set up creates what's called a voltage divider.
Ooh.
Which is basically, it's a way to kill signal or voltage.
Same
sort of thing for what we're talking about.
So I think my next stage, which is what I'm working on next, is to essentially add a buffer there to bring back some power to the signal at the end, right?
Yeah, that would help. Depending. You could put the buffer before the tone control. I'm sorry, after the tone control, before the volume. That's one way to experiment. Another way is to put it after the volume experiment. So there's not just one way.
Okay.
You could also just move the tone control. Move it before a circuit block. See what happens.
Well, I do need to spend some time with you and let you laugh at me down the phone because some of my experiences have been hideous. But I am going to try adding the that op amp booster I made, the little 071 base booster, as a circuit block before this to see what happens. And after it, because obviously it does give you an extra 10 decibel volume when it's set at max. So might be able to do something interesting there.
Mm-hmm.
But I quite like the idea of making my own original circuit now. That's my new goal. I know it's not original. I know you've coached way, but it kind of feels like I'm putting my own blocks together.
You kind of are, you know? I mean, it's a lot of fun putting together kits. And it's much easier than doing everything from scratch. But there's something to be said about just experimenting and applying Lego block, the red Lego block with the green Lego block. And what does this build?
No, 100% agree. The kits have been great. I've learned a lot from them. I might do one or two more, but I think actually I'm just going to try and make my own unique circuits.
You know, the next step after you do some of this for a little bit, the next step is you need to start laying out your own circuit board.
Okay.
Ooh, I was going to say,
I've also thought about doing some modifications because I've got a couple of PDFs. They're how to modify your guitar pedal for the DS1, I think, and the BD1, if I recall correctly. Or was it BD2. The BD2?
BD2.
BD2, yes.
It's like, what's a BD1?
Oh, it's a special
pedal. Why did Boss skip over the BD1? What's up with that?
I mean, they got them all over the place. Like, why is the DD2 the DD2?
Yeah,
that was the first. That was the first digital delay ever, I think. But for some reason, it's a DD2.
There's only one man on earth that can answer this, and that name is Josh Scott.
But I don't think he's going to talk to us anymore.
He's not. Oh, because we have the pedal.
Yeah.
I wonder if he'll barter, Josh. I have some bartering ammunition.
It says right on it. Not for Josh.
Which means that since he is not supposed to get this, that means I have more leverage than him. See?
There's even a circle with an X through him.
There is.
Not for Josh. Hmm. Interesting.
Right. So whilst you're merrily clicking away at the foot switch on your pedal... what else have we got going on? Well, there's a couple of things going on.
I mean, real quick, I just learned something literally 3 minutes ago looking through this document that I had no idea. And I'm literally astonished. I'm a little speechless. Sammy Ash died.
Yes.
I had no idea. Sammy, I mean, I've worked with Sammy for years.
Yes.
I had no idea.
He passed away, I believe it was Tuesday evening. Sunday evening. I'm getting my days mixed up. But it was a very strange timing thing for me, because I'd been messaging with Sammy, you know, on Facebook primarily, but like for quite a while, and you know, chatting a little bit here and there on his posts and whatever, and he was going to come on the podcast. He was going to come on the Tone Mob podcast. And last summer, when we were trying to get that together, he had some family stuff going on, and we kind of rescheduled. So I kind of just waited to see him start posting on his, he had like a Sammy's Guitar Stories page where he would just tell tales about being in the industry. It was really interesting, actually. And I was kind of waiting for to see some of that stuff pop back up before I bothered him about coming on the show again. And I did last Tuesday. And so I sent him an email and was talking to some of the String Joy guys about it. And literally the next thing I know, he had passed. So he had, I guess, been battling stage 4 melanoma for like a year. And yeah, it's really a bummer. He was such a important figure in the MI world.
Now,
just so anyone, you may not know, sorry, Richard, go ahead.
Well, I may be about to say what you're about to say. Now, I'd been to Sam Ash music stores in America when I traveled over in the 90s, so that name rings a bell. So I assume he's connected with that.
But yeah, he's the grandson. He's
grandson, right? Yeah. But what I didn't realize is he's basically the guy who named the Tube Screamer the Tube Screamer. And he's, I think, literally we had
the
guy story. That
named the Tube Screamer the Tube Screamer. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm usually I read these topics before we start, and I hadn't, and I'm a little speechless.
Yeah, it's a pretty big bummer for the whole industry. He was definitely one of the more influential people in the business, for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. When he was naming the Tube Screamer, he asked, what's his name? Tamara.
Susumu?
Yes.
Susumu Tamara? Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. He said, do you know how the crybaby got its name? It sounds like a baby crying. This sounds like a screaming tube amp. And then Tube Screamer was born.
There you go. Yeah.
Sad times, dudes. And a reminder to all of us that life is precious. Spend every day doing something that makes you happy.
Well, which is why I'd like to announce my retirement.
I was going to say, I got to quit this podcast then, so I'll see you guys later.
Guys, enjoy the podcast. I'm kidding.
I mean, he worked right up.
I mean, right, I could see myself doing the same sort of thing, because he was still involved with the business recently.
He was. In fact, the post that made me reach back out to him was him saying, like, I'm finally going to slow down and have less to do with the business here moving forward, so I'll have a little more time to play guitar and talk about guitars. And I was like, oh, perfect. Time to reach out and get you back on the podcast. But I have to imagine, because that post was only from like September 7th. So he must have really took a drastic turn pretty quickly. I mean, I know it's a rough go battling any kind of cancer, but in early September, he was talking about, you know, kind of doing more guitar stuff, and less work stuff. And here we are just a couple weeks later. So,
well, my heart goes out to the family.
For sure.
I can't really follow that with a clever comment, because it would be,
I don't really know how to segue away from that one.
Yeah. So yeah.
In other news, that's maybe a little more uplifting. Chick-fil-A in the UK.
That is the song that the Sex Pistols needed to write. Never mind Anarchy in the UK. I want Chick-fil-A in the UK.
I got the fried chicken. Waffle potato fries inside of me.
I love the sauces all over my face.
I hope neither of your retirement plans involve starting a punk band up. I'm just going to let you know.
If I did,
Richard,
I would write.
All I've ever been in is punk band. Settle down.
Yeah,
what's your thoughts on this? Apparently this did not go well the previous time they tried this, huh?
No, mainly because they are relatively well known for having, you know,
marginalizing certain people and
communities. Yeah, which I think they've stepped back on a little bit now.
Really weird how when that starts messing with profits, people do that.
Isn't that weird? I mean, I'm actually not that bothered by it because I've discovered a source of the source in the UK after our good friend Adam spent a fortune shipping me a bottle. I then thought there must be another way of getting it, and I found some. And I'm kind of done with that now. But you know what this country needs more than anything? It's White Castle. That.
Why?
Because the tiny little heart attack buns. That's
they're
why.
Not, they're
a
not.
A dozen good. Tiny little heart attacks.
Yeah,
good. Please,
yeah,
but, good yeah. sir.
I mean, Chick-fil-A at least has really good Southwestern chicken soup. Chicken enchilada soup. Fantastic.
Chicken enchilada soup.
Oh,
that's three
amazing.
Separate words.
Their chocolate chip cookies are the best in the business when it comes
to
fast food.
Yes.
You know, I'm just going to go out. I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it right now. Chick-fil-A, overrated. Overrated. If you got to have fast food fried chicken, it's Popeyes 100% every single time.
Not going to. Yeah, 100% on that. I haven't actually been to one of the UK Popeyes yet. There's one in Brighton, but I'm not going all the way there just for a Popeyes. I did go there recently. Why didn't I visit Popeyes? Dang. The Wendy's has opened up near me, though, so we've got Wendy's near
us. Oh, we can talk about that again.
Yeah, we can talk about that again.
Yeah, okay, all right.
But no, I want White Castle, but I think it's a dying brand out there, isn't it? I think it was just that one film that made it popular
closed?
Again.
Around here, there was a White Castle, and it closed.
I went to White Castle. There's none around here that I'm aware of. When I was in Tennessee, though, I was like, all right, what's all the hype about White Castle? Let me go there. And I got it, and I was like, well, never doing that again. So.
I think the answer, my good friend, is it is stoner food. Because it's just like, I'm going to have a dozen burgers that I can eat like joint after joint. I think that's how it works anyway.
Joint after joint, like...
you smoke a joint, eat a burger. Yeah, smoke another joint, eat a burger.
The White Castle... Oh. Richard,
it's
no,
not description.
Not on air. Oh, that's not a joint.
And then burger, right?
And then burger.
And so then after that, then you're like, oh, that's not it. But that
Space
works.
Burgers that by Brian
That
Wendler.
Was the wrong sound, but that works.
So you have a joint, a burger, and then you ascend.
The rapture is upon me. Okay, speaking of, we've got some subjects here that I want to talk about on Patreon. So,
hey guys, I gotta go. I got a bloody nose.
Oh yeah,
we'll see you on Patreon.
I'll
if
be
over
back.
There.
Yeah,
I laughed too hard.
Oh, and
the bloody nose. Wow.
I think
yeah,
we need
say
to
it
do
again,
some...
Blake. Say it again.
Yeah, that's what happens when you get a pedal that's not for Richard.
That's right. Josh
week,
I'll punch you one more time. Sorry, guys.
This week, Bri,
yep.
We should probably ask an AI version of David Bowie to read out the credits for our lovely producers. What do you reckon? Can
that's
you manage
a,
that?
You know, I would love to hear a little bit of David Bowie discussing our lovely, lovely executive producers who help us put on the Patreon show.
Well, let's make that happen.
Bill Bays, Jake Young from the Men the Helm podcast, Justin Burke, David Tyndall, Nitos, Dave Trombetti, Shannon Weaver and the band Reduced to Rust, Eric Wilson, Vidar Frushtar, Michael Freer, Sean Arbaugh of Gun Street Wiring, Rick Calhoun of Honeypicks, Patrice Fournays, DJ Patty F, Dylan Talks Tone, Scientific Uppercut, Kevin Harrington, Barry from Grey's Guitars, Tom Kelly, Pigsy, John O'Neill, Robert Carr, Hunter Hudson, Rob Stokes, Jordan from Poison Noises, Nick Spano, The Twang Kings, Sasha Sir, Jay Stratton, Seth Williford, Grumpy Mike, Harry Post, The Studio Rats, Harvey Pedals, Alison Carroll, Patrick Zeller, Bum Laser, Anthony Stevens, Chris Brown.
Thanks for listening to the Chasing Dome podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you can email podcast@wamplerpedals.com and I'll personally get your email. To email Blake, simply email info@tonemob.com and Richard can be reached at richard@wamplerpedals.com. If you'd like to show your support for the show, the simplest and free way to do that is to share this podcast with a friend, leave a review and a rating wherever you normally get your podcasts. Also, check out Blake's podcast called The Tone Mob. And make sure you check out WamplerPedals.com for blogs, videos, and of course, guitar effects. If you'd like to hear the post-podcast conversations and to get even more content, twice the amount of podcast episodes, simply check out our Patreon at patreon.com/chasingtonepodcast. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.